Okay, so we're back. Thanks again for staying with us. We're going to switch spots now because Paul decided that after his little dance online, he needs to take over the pilot scene here.
I do.
And that's perfectly fine because it's actually your session right now. So you can. I will allow you to drive this one.
I'm telling you, I'm going to drive it.
Fair enough. By the way, actually, when James was doing his thing, and then, you know, he's kind of like the director and the producer are going crazy. First of all, it's funny that he says that because the director in this case was me. I didn't think I was, but hey, why not? And if we had another camera here in the studio, you would have seen me. I was going back and forth, and because every time I thought he was going to be done, and then he's like, oh, let me add in one more demo. But that's because he was just getting excited for you guys. So
he's telling the truth.
Yeah, I mean, and he's been here to watch it the entire time. So, but again, the beauty of doing this stuff live, and I was actually going to say live television, and then it occurred to me that this isn't quite a television. Or even when we say, like, on the air, it's not really on the air, it's more like on the bandwidth.
Well, perhaps one of our viewers are actually watching this on a television via VGA or HDMI cable, in which case it would be a television show.
That's true. All right, how about this? Let us know in the chat how you are watching us, just so that we can settle this this little bit between us. All right.
You will be banned if you say iPad.
Even though, like, and he says this in an Azure workshop, where we are very happy to support all platforms. In fact, you heard me talk about iOS, and you heard James talk about iOS. Maybe you're not talking about iOS.
I actually will be, a little bit. So I'll
then
mention
what's the problem?
I'm just being facetious.
All right. So what I thought we would do with this session is give you a little bit of a different kind of twist on the cloud. Reason being, so we finished off with James talking about Windows 8 applications, or I should say Windows Store applications, and I keep confusing between the two because, well, it's confusing. But the idea is all of these things are now available for you. The Windows Store is open, as you heard James and I talk about, for Canadians.
Yep.
Windows 8 is launching
on Friday.
So that makes us 4 days.
Four days, yes.
And a whole bunch of hours. Okay. There's actually on the Canadian Developer Connection blog, there's a countdown.
There is a countdown. You should watch every second.
I may have done that once or twice. But point being, all of these things are now in place, which means that hopefully you've gone into MSDN. If you have MSDN, you've created your Windows Store developer account. Or if you don't have MSDN, and hopefully you're interested enough in this stuff, and in which case you subscribed to a Windows Store developer account. Point being, now's the time to build apps. So what I thought we would do is focus a little bit on the design aspect of your applications, and then Paul's going to tie it all together in terms of how you take all of these different design experiences and app experiences and then bring them all together with the cloud.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
All right. So with that, they're all yours.
All right. Thank you very much, John. Ethan. And I called James Jamie today, too. It's just one of those days, I guess. Anyways, thank you very much, everybody, for showing up. My name is Paul Aberish. I'm a peer of Jonathan's. I'm a technical evangelist with Microsoft Canada. As you can see, there's my contact information there. So feel free to give me a shout on email or follow me on the Twitter or whatever it is that you feel most comfortable doing. And then we'll be happy to have a conversation with you about your Windows Store apps, your Windows Phone apps, your services using Azure that might be consumed by other form factors such as the iPad or the Android apps. And if you heard that, that was Jonathan making a boo-boo with his chair. So anyways, let's move forward. There's a graphic by this guy by the name of Hugh McLeod. He has this blog called gapingvoid.com. This is, he does doodles. He's got actually a daily cartoon, which is kind of interesting. He's a big, big fixture at a conference known as South by Southwest. If you have heard of it or been there, you know it's probably a pretty cool spot to be. Unfortunately, I have not been there yet myself, but I am a very, very big fan of Hugh's because he has these cartoons that may seem a little bit weird or flippant, I guess you could say in some ways, but he actually sends a very, very strong message in probably 90 to 95% of the cartoons that he makes. And this one's, I think, actually very, very relevant. I've used this for 5 years, and it's still as relevant today as it was 5 years ago. As you can see, it's not about the software. It's about what the user does. And really, this is something that I think everybody that's watching this has an innate understanding of what that really means. But at the same time, you may not necessarily be thinking about it on a day-to-day basis because maybe you're focused on the server side of things, or maybe you have a set way of building out the UIs for your line of business applications or your apps that are consumer facing or anything else like that. And you just might think to yourself that, you know what, my UI works just great because people have downloaded the app or bought the software that I've built with it or anything else of that nature. And I think we need to really revisit this idea because it's not about software, it's about the user, really, in a lot of ways. And we're really trying to drive the right behaviors and the right experiences for our users so that they can be productive or happy or both, right? And really that's what this new world of apps and software and everything of that nature is really sort of driving towards, because we're also in an era of what's called the consumerization of IT, which is a phrase that's probably been used altogether too much. But it actually does reflect an idea behind the way business is changing and the way we as employees of big companies or small companies are really interpreting how we do work. And I think that's really, really important for everybody to understand because, you know, a CFO, or maybe yourself as a developer or as an IT manager or whatever it is that you do in your daily life, maybe you got a new iPad for Christmas or for holidays or whatever it is that you did. And the first thing that comes to mind after you've downloaded a whole bunch of apps and everything else like that is, I want to connect this to my email because that way I can bring it to work and make use of it while I'm in meetings or whatever it is. And in fact, when I talk to a lot of line of business and enterprises, specifically, for example, there's been a lot of discussions I've had with banks, for example. A lot of the executives have iPads and whatever else, and they're bringing these things into meetings, and they're using it as a consumption device for their email. And that makes it a little bit more difficult, not only for the IT departments that have to manage these things, and I'm really not going to talk about that here, but I'm actually going to talk a lot more about how do you drive the right experience for your software so that it makes the user productive or happy or both, okay? As I sort of talked about already, a user has an expectation of how he or she wants to work with your app or how he or she is going to use that application, right? And I think it's really important to understand something here is that in the little box that we have here, the blue box, I should say, it says any app that meets specifications like functional or non-functional or performance specifications, you know, requirements documentation and everything. That's great. You may meet every single checkbox that's involved with that. But if it does not meet the expectations of the user from an experience perspective, ultimately your application or your software will have failed. I mean, it's pretty simple, right? If you don't have buy-in from your user or from your customer, then you're going to fail. And as a result, the mantra should always be, your user comes first, always. This is the law. We don't change that, okay? Because ultimately, you may build the greatest software in the world, but if they don't use it, it's basically a worthless piece of software. So again, think about it. Say, for example, your app is like a line of business desktop application, you know, like Windows Forms or WPF application or a website even type of thing. And more recently, you know, iOS apps such as an iPad app or an iPhone app, Android, BlackBerry, Playbook, whatever it is that you're actually building towards. What if your application is that and your application is successful on that one platform, you know, what website? Say, for example, you create a great website that everybody starts to flock to. What do you do to actually drive that experience to other platforms that you may be thinking of, like the iPhone or Windows Store applications for Windows 8 and things like that? How do you actually manage meeting those expectations of the users across those various different platforms, right? But you have to maintain a consistent personality for your product at the same time because of the fact that if the personality of your application across these various different platforms doesn't seem to fit properly, you're probably going to have a dissatisfaction quotient with your user, and I think that's something you really have to pay attention to and be very, very careful about. So the real trick to this is how do you create a cross-platform experience that caters to the platform that the application is currently hosted on, yet if that user decided to pick up on a different platform, whether it's a web, whether it's a desktop application, or whether it's a Windows Store application or an iOS application, how do you actually make sure that the user understands how to use that application in that context and actually be productive and happy across those platforms as well? And if you can actually manage to answer those questions in a very successful manner, then your application will be successful. So really, this sort of gets down to what I'm talking about here. It's like understanding the personality of your application's experience. And I'm going to use the word application quite a bit for the rest of this presentation because this is really what we're talking about. We're not talking about a user interface. We're actually talking about an experience or the personality. What is the spirit of your application? And how do you actually bring forth that spirit of the application across all these different platforms? So let's talk about what it's not. And I sort of alluded to this just right now, right? It's not the recreation of a UI or the reuse of a UI, user interface, in other words. That is the absolute worst thing that you can do. Like, one of the things that I've found is that when we were launching Windows Phone 7, before 7.5, but actually Phone 7, there was a very large Canadian brand, which I won't mention, that had a very successful application on the iOS platform. And when they decided to adopt Windows Phone, they said, well, we're just going to recreate the UI that we have for the iOS application because, frankly, it works. We get great reviews on the iTunes store and everything. So therefore, we're just going to use that, and everybody's going to love it. Well, nobody loved it on Windows Phone. And the reason for that was that the experience was not in line with what the platform provided, right? So if you think about an iOS application, and it's got sort of the glassy buttons, and it's got its own style and uses skeuomorphism, if you're familiar with that term, which basically means that you're making use of everyday sort of objects as an alliteration to what your application does. I'll talk a little bit more about that later if you're interested. But basically, the whole idea behind that is they actually use that same UI in the Windows Phone app, and it was a disgusting sort of experience, unfortunately, because it didn't fit at all, right? Yes, they managed to keep what you could consider some of the personality of the application because it did have a character of its own that was consistent across those experiences, but they also carried across the UI, and the UI was not appropriate. So what we don't want to do when you're creating an application that crosses all these different platforms is have a consistent UI. Instead, you want to have a consistent experience or consistent personality for your application. And really, this is what we're talking about here. I'm not going to really read all this. This is fairly text-heavy. But basically, the whole idea behind this is that if you understand the personality of what your application is really about, like the core personality. I'm not talking functionality necessarily. I'm actually talking about the personality of your application. And if you're able to transport that personality across those platforms, then you will be successful with your application. So let's take a look at examples here. We have Windows Phone 7.5 on the left, and we have Windows 8 on the right. Now, you may have heard and seen, probably everybody on the webcast or livecast here today has seen these two UIs, right? And you might be thinking to yourself, it's the same thing. They might use that same modern UI, which used to be called something else, which I'm not allowed to talk about anymore. But basically, the modern UI is similar across these two platforms, but they're not the same, which is really kind of an interesting sort of revelation to a lot of people that may be very, very, very much a fan of this sort of way of looking at a new UI. It's very flat and it's very colorful in a lot of ways. And yes, both Windows 8 and Windows Phone share those same personalities, right? But there are differences in the way it actually works. So, as for example, you can see that the text, the typeface, is actually slightly different on Windows Phone compared to Windows 8. It's minute, but it is very, very different. And that in itself is actually a definition of the experience that you're trying to provide for those specific platforms. In addition, you know, there's a lot more information that you see, for example, on a Windows 8 tile as opposed to a Windows Phone tile. And again, this was done absolutely on purpose because of the fact that the form factors are different. Windows 8 is all about the PC. And we define a PC as a very broad thing. It's a tablet. It's a desktop, it's a laptop, it's a TV potentially, right? All those things are basically a PC that we consider for Windows 8. The phone, however, is a little bit of a different story. That form factor is very, very small, and as a result, what you're trying to do is provide a really good experience that is very, very focused on a mobile solution for the phone. So that is what the Windows Phone team did is actually create a great experience for that phone. And then the Windows 8 team built a great experience that would actually fit a number of different form factors that we consider to be a PC. So despite the fact that at a glance, they're actually the same UI, they're actually not. And that's really, really important. Now let's take a look at some examples of blank applications. So if I fired up Visual Studio today, and I brought up a Windows Phone project and a Windows 8 project, or Windows Store app project, I should say, you'll notice here that there's two different screens. The one on the left is Windows Phone, obviously. The one on the right, obviously, is Windows 8. Windows Phone makes use in a lot of applications of something called the pivot app control. Now, the pivot control, as you can see, has the pivot is sort of a tabbed sort of look and feel to it. First and second are the tabs on top of it, or we, as we more commonly call it in Windows Phone, the pivots. And then you have a list-based sort of information that is, exists in each of those pivots. There is no such thing as a pivot control within Windows 8. And again, this is not because we decided to be different, but because the pivot control is very focused on the form factor of the phone, while as a Windows 8 application has a lot more expansive capabilities. It's got more room to do stuff. So a rough equivalent, although not exactly directly the same, is a grid control. And as you can see here, we have grids that have a group, set of groups, and then each item is actually a tile, if you want to call it that, or a shape, a square. Very, very different look and feel between those two different platforms. Yet, you could sort of envision and imagine the idea where you actually create a phone application and a Windows Store application, and they actually are the same application but have a, and share the same personality, but they don't have the same UI. Now, I'm going to show you an application, at least in screenshot format, because it's probably easiest to do here, an application called Cocktail Flow. And if you're familiar with Windows Phone 7 or Windows 8, for that matter, you may already be familiar with Cocktail Flow. It's actually one of the applications that I consider to be a reference application for how to do things right with the user interface and the experience between Windows 8 and Windows Phone. And they've actually brought Cocktail Flow, based on the success of the Windows Phone application, to Android as well as to the iPhone. So I'm going to show you screenshots of each of these because I think it's actually really interesting to see how they've decided to create the user interfaces for each of these platforms, same sort of idea, same application, keeping the personality of the application, yet actually having slightly different UIs that cater appropriately to the platform that they're targeting. So let's take a look first. Oop, I went backwards there. There we go. Windows Phone on the top. So the two screens that you see on the top. So the one where it says all cocktails by category, da-da-da-da-da. That's sort of one of the main menu sort of screens for Windows Phone for Cocktail Flow. And then the second one, the Winter Chill screen that you see there, is basically a details view of a specific drink. So Cocktail Flow, if you're not familiar with it, if probably obviously self-evident, it's for adult beverages. So if you're interested in taking a look at it, take a look at it. It's actually a great party sort of application. I've used it many times when I've been hosting family and friends. But you can see that it's a very, very unique look and feel, right? They've done a really good job at understanding the modern UI for the phone and driving home a really beautiful form factor for the phone, yet keeping in line with the UI guidelines. Likewise, you take a look at the bottom screen or the bottom image, and this is the Windows 8, the Windows Store app version of this application. Now, very, very different in a lot of ways, right? You can definitely see the differences right away by taking a look at it. So the Winter Chill Windows Phone screen that you see there and the screen for the Windows Store app that you see on, down the bottom are basically the equivalent screens across those two platforms. They are very, very different. They have a different way of actually interacting with the user. So for example, there's pivots for the actual Windows Phone application. The Windows Store app actually uses sort of similar to a grid, but it uses a little bit of a different left to right feel and everything. Yet, very, very different UIs, yet very, very similar and actually contain the same personality, right? So it's got that same slick look to it from the imaging that they use. If you were taking a look at the way they use motion and the way they use their the animations within the application, they're actually very similar in that respect as well. So there are cues, whether they're visual or not, that actually make the user familiar with the application across those platforms. So that's a really good example between Windows Phone and Windows 8. But like I said as well, this application has been ported to Android and to iOS. So let's take a look at those. This is the iOS version of the application. So if you take a look, there's two different screens here. The first screen is basically the similar sort of menu that you would see as on the Windows Phone. And you see the second one, which is basically a detailed image of a specific app or a specific drink in this case. They don't look at all like the Windows Phone application. And I think that's really important because they've understood that the team that built Cocktail Flow understands the UI representations of iOS and Windows Phone, and as you'll see a little bit later, Android, to actually provide a great experience across Windows Phone, Windows 8, and now iOS as well. So what they do is you can see that where it was sort of a minimalist UI for Windows Phone and Windows 8, they've actually implemented what's called the skeuomorphism, as I said before, for iOS. Now, skeuomorphism means that you're actually using visual cues that are available in everyday life. So, for example, they're using a wood grain within the details look of the screen. And if you take a look at it, you know there's snow on top of the name of the app of the drink itself. So this is also a skeuomorphism, saying you know it's a winter drink and everything. So it's a visual cue saying, you know, various different components or attributes of the drink itself. It fits very, very nicely into iOS. While as this, if you actually put this on a Windows Phone application, it would fail miserably because you've forgotten the spirit of the actual operating system that you're hosting the application on. Yet, you take a look at the iOS and Windows Phone app, they share the same personality, which is important. Now, take a look at Android. Again, so you can see here, Android's kind of interesting because they've taken a little bit of both and actually implemented that the iOS and the Windows Phone sort of look and feel into their applications. So the one on the bottom is the phone version of Android, where you can see it's sort of got that modern UI look kind of, but they're making use of some of the gradient textures and things which are familiar to the Android user. Likewise, on the tablet version, it's using skeuomorphism. In this case, it's a tropical drink, so it's got like the grass roof hut that you can see right there. So it almost looks like you're at a bar and you're actually getting these drinks, and it's very, very inviting for you to take a drink of it and those types of things. But again, they're making use of the right sort of looks and feels for those specific platforms. And at the same time, it's very evident that it's the same application across all these different sort of screens, right? So I think this is a great example of how this sort of works in across platforms. So let's talk a little bit about another bit of a case study, and this one's not one that's actually out there today. And yes, I'm going to pull out the Contoso card. If you're not familiar with Contoso, it's the catch-all name of our company, fictitious companies that we use in demos for Microsoft. And basically, what we're going to do here is, say, for example, we have a website, so Contoso Stocks. And forgive the horrible design. This is probably the worst consumer stock website design ever. But it's just sort of a quick sort of thing to show, you know, okay, yeah, this is a website that you can do all sorts of stuff, right? So if you take a quick look at all the various things on this website, and say, for example, Contoso Stocks was like the runaway hit. It's a new E-Trade or whatever you want to call it. And it allows you to make trades very, very easily on the stock market, and everybody wins because the information on it is so good that even the housing market in the U.S. couldn't make people lose money. But anyways, think about it. Take a look at the screen, and let's take an inventory of exactly what's involved with this screen. So what did you see, right? There's a whole lot that you saw on this actual site. So this is just a set of the things that you can see from this one screen, which is like the details screen for a specific stock that you might want to buy. You know, you can log in or log out of the site, I should say, change account settings, buy stocks. You can see it all there. I'm not going to go through it. That's a lot of information. Yet, it actually works okay for a website because websites typically do contain a lot of information. You have a lot of screen real estate. And the way a browsing behavior happens with a user is they expect usually quite a bit of information on the screen. So in this case, maybe this is an effective UI and everything of that nature. So let's take a look at how you would build this for Windows 8. So if you built this website and it's awesome, and then you decide, hey, Windows 8 is coming out, I'm going to build a Windows Store app because I see the opportunity right now because it's a new store and, you know, I can get my app ahead of everybody else and everything. So let's take a look at basically what this might look like. So what I've done is I've taken a look, and I'm going to go back to all these various things that you see right here. I took a look at what the basic scenarios are of actually making use of this website and actually sort of created a whole bunch of sections associated with that. So going back to the Windows 8, you can see a list of all the various different sections that I might have created within this app. So the one that you're seeing in the screenshot is you have a section called My Portfolio, which obviously would be the stocks that you have in your portfolio. So the supported scenarios within this screen might be, you know, portfolio at a glance, which is what you see here, transaction history, which there's a visual cue that you can see onto the right-hand side where there's history. Maybe that's a way you can get to that. Maybe view orders or, you know, all those types of things. So that's all one screen. It's a left-to-right sort of screen motion and everything, but that is a section. That would be considered a screen that supports multiple different scenarios. Likewise, you may have a situation where you're modifying the portfolio, right? So you might buy stocks or sell stocks or modify watch lists that you have, and that might be a separate sort of screen on there. Likewise, you know, stock details and everything. And I think it's really important now, the bottom two sections that we have here are not so much screens per se, although they do have elements of that as well. But this is Contoso Stocks, understanding the platform that is Windows 8 and how you actually interact with the user via Windows 8 via the charms. So if you're familiar with charms on Windows 8, you'll notice that, yes, I have the ability to add contextual search into my application via the charms side of things. And if you are doing search within your application for Windows Store apps, definitely use the search charm. So the search, the scenario for that would be, you know, searching stock would be implemented within a charm. Likewise, account settings or log out and those types of things might be put into the account settings of the actual settings charm as well. So this is a great example of where you don't have to create a screen per scenario or even a screen for a set of scenarios. You can actually make use and leverage the platform appropriately to create a great experience that actually works well for the user that might be using the website. So you can tell right away that, yeah, okay, I can do the same sort of things that I was able to do on the website, yet this might be a more visual and more pleasing representation for me if I'm using Windows 8 because it fits the look and feel that I'm looking for. Now let's take a look as well as to what this might look like on Windows Phone. And I'm using something called Sketchflow to actually do rapid prototyping, and you can search for Sketchflow. It's a tool that comes with Expression Blend, which is one of our interactive design tools as part of the Visual Studio, you know, suite of tools, I guess you could say, although it's its own tool and its own as well. But you can see this looks very different than the Windows 8 or Windows Store app, as you can see, as does this look very different than the website. I'm using a pivot in this case because the pivot seems to make the most sense. So in this case, for example, my portfolio is a list of stocks that I might have, and then I can tap on one of these stocks and get the details of this specific stock, right? So Microsoft. So I can find out, well, maybe it was down 6 cents today or something of that nature and get some details. I can use a separate pivot that actually brings me to a chart and maybe get some news associated with it as well. Likewise, I can have a separate screen for buy and sell, and that sort of makes sense as well. And as you can also see here, is that I've created sections for each of these components within the Windows Phone app that are different than the Windows Store app that I showed you before, and different than the way you interact with the application on the web. Yet, you can tell right away that they actually have that same personality, right? So maybe you might have a bit more branding on this. This is just a rapid prototyping, for example, but the ultimate idea here is that you're providing that great experience for those different sort of form factors, right? So I spent a lot of wind and time just talking about design principles and consistency of experience from a personality standpoint. And you might be thinking to yourself, well, why am I talking about this and not talking about the cloud? Well, the cloud is what I call the adhesive to this entire experience, right? It's funny because a lot of people when I talk to them about Windows Azure specifically, obviously, but the cloud in general as well, is they don't see the cloud as an experiential factor. They see it as the glue behind the scenes or everything else like that. And I think that's actually the wrong way to look at things. So let's take a look at this. A consistent experience or a great experience, a, you know, a great personality for an application does not happen when it's not connected to a back-end service normally. Now, there are some exceptions to that. Maybe there's a situation where perhaps your application doesn't need a back-end service, but that's very, very rare in this day and age, right? So most applications tend to be connected and have some sort of internet service capability. And as you can see, we have multiple different screens here. So I think it's really important to think through exactly what your services infrastructure or your services layer for your application looks like before you even get into building your UI. It's actually really, really important to think about that. So think of it this way, you know, if you've architected your application the right way on the back end, right, you actually can create a great experience. But if you have a really horrible architecture for your services, in this case, hosted on Windows Azure, hopefully, for example, you actually create your back end services as a first class citizen equal to the user interface associated with your application. Now, that's something that seems to be a little bit foreign to a lot of people, and I get why that is, because the service really is not something that touches the user directly. It's always the data that's pulled in that actually the UI presents to the user. But I think it's really important to realize that, you know, those services are just as important to the experience or the experiential factor of your application as the UI itself. So if you've got a bad experience for bad services back end, you're going to have a horrible experience. So first-class citizen alongside the UI. And I think that's something that even designers have a problem figuring out sometimes as well. So what does Windows Azure bring to the table? Let's think about it. Now, I got this little diagram that probably everybody's seen before. Infrastructure as a service, platform as a service, software as a service. Everything is software plus services, which is a term that we used to use. And even if you're talking to a Microsoft employee, you may have heard the term three screens in the cloud, which refers to the PC, the phone, and the television associated and glued together by cloud services within Windows Azure. Now more than any day, any time ever, we have a situation where these services, the capabilities of creating a great custom, not custom, but a consistent experience across various different screens is now a reality. We've talked about it within Microsoft for 5 years. And finally, we have a situation where we have Windows 8, Windows Phone, Xbox, and cloud services through Windows Azure, all three clicking together, and then the cloud putting them all together as in the glue side to create a great experience. I don't think there's any other sort of platform company out there that can provide that level of service that we currently have, and I think that's really important. Ultimately, choice and flexibility build the right experience for your users. So as an Azure expert or someone that's looking to build on Azure, the interesting thing about this is that you have the capability of deciding whether you want to manage your services from an infrastructural standpoint, in which case you've got virtual machines that you're managing and everything, platform as a service, whereas you actually are hosting your own application, and you don't care about the management necessarily of the application itself. Azure will provide that for you. And then third, software as a service. We have a number of great examples and great services out there, like Office 365, like cloud, SkyDrive, and all those types of things that are running on our Azure backend that create an amazing experience for the users that you can actually hook into within your application as well. So hopefully that sort of gives you an idea of the fact that we've thought about the three screens consistency strategy around the user interface and the user personality or the personality of the application, and then how you actually hook that up into the cloud. And James did a great example with the mobile services, how you can make use of those mobile services across all those different things. Finally, last thing, and I know I'm running over, but I don't care. It's my time right now. A user does not want to use your software. A user wants to have used your software. And I think that's kind of an interesting sort of look at things, right? The purpose of software is not to have a user use it. It's actually to have a user get the information that they need so that they can make a decision and get on their way. Very few people have saying that I'm using Outlook because I want to use Outlook. No, I'm using Outlook because I want to get information that somebody's telling me. And then I got to go and make a decision based on that information. The only exception to that might be something like Angry Birds, where you might want to spend all day doing that kind of stuff. But games are sort of a different sort of scenario. But even then, the whole point of a game, for example, would be that you're trying to actually beat the level. So they don't want to be in the level forever. They want to have beaten the level so that they can brag about it. So that is it. What I have is some resources here that might be of interest to you. The first one is the Consistency of Experience blog series. So this is a work in progress, so just be aware that the first three posts of this are up. There's four more, I think, that are going to be coming that I'm working on. This deck is actually built largely on the premises that I'm building in those blog posts. So you may notice some of the images I pilfered from that blog post series that I'm building. But if you're interested in hearing more about it, take a look at those blog posts and actually see if you can keep up with them, because I think they might be useful to you. Also, the Windows 8 design guidelines are a great place to sort of figure out exactly how to create the right experience for your applications, connected applications, hopefully. And those same lessons can be used across various different platforms as well. Even though we are focused on the modern UI side of things, I think the Windows 8 design guidelines are a really good spot to be. So with that, thank you for your time. And I guess now we're late and we need to start talking.
There is no such thing as a late in a live event. It's
there
just sort of a given.
It's a given, yeah.
But anyway, so we were chatting about this on the chat, and well, obviously we were chatting on the chat. You know what I mean? We were talking about it on the chat about how, you know, like, why talk about app experiences or app design in a cloud workshop? And what I was telling everyone online was, you know, I'm assuming after, you know, we kind of went through that first session where we talked conceptually, then we went through James's session, we actually saw how to make this stuff real.
Yep.
I'm hoping that you guys are going to take this opportunity to build apps. So my thinking was, if you have the back end down packed with mobile services.
Yes.
Now you're going to work on the front end, and you're going to make an awesome looking application that you're going to deploy out to your users. The more your users like your application, the more you're going to see the need for scalability and that geographic footprint and so on and so forth. Then you'll be able to see the back end of how mobile services enables all that for you.
Exactly.
More importantly, especially if you're putting your application in there and it's not free, or even if you're doing a free app that has in-app ads, like, this stuff can actually make you money.
Right? Absolutely.
But it only happens if you have the two pieces together. A great-looking app experience and a consistent app experience. By the way, there's actually a... Paul and I did a Developers show, or Devs Cubed, if you've seen the show. We actually did one a couple of episodes ago where we were talking about this idea of a consistent app experience and why that's actually important. So check that one out. If you go to the Canadian Developer Connection blog, which is blogs.msdn.com/cdndevs, you'll see on the right-hand side there's going to be a little cube, red cube. It says D3 on it. Click on that. Go to the previous episodes. You'll see consistent app experiences there with Paul. Kind of touches upon this stuff too. If you put that together with what you learned in this one, together with what you learned in James's session, in theory, you should have one kick-ass app that is going to make you hopefully a lot of money. And if not money, then crazy visibility. Be in the Windows Store, ideally sooner rather than later, and you'll just get eyeballs on your good-looking app.
Yeah, I mean, it comes down to the point of, you know, if you're building on Azure, maybe you're actually in the business of providing an API service, in which case you don't necessarily worry as much about the user interface, although you still might, because you might want to create a website that's associated with it, for example. But one of the things that I think is really important, and again, it's tough sometimes to conceptualize this because we are dealing with back-end infrastructure and back-end services, is the fact that most people, when they're building an Azure portal of some sort, you know, Azure services, they're doing it as part of a larger project that includes the UI. And I think it's really important that not only you guys as Azure developers understand that the UI is important, which I'm sure you guys do, but also the flip side is the design people or the developers that are building the front end pieces need to understand that there is a responsibility of the back end services to provide that great experience as well. And I think one of the great things about the fact that we have this three screens in a cloud sort of strategy that we've been yakking about forever, like I said, is the fact that we finally have this amazing experience and this amazing vision that's been realized for the large part through Windows 8, through Windows Phone, through Xbox, through the browser, you know, like with IE10, for example. And then it all is hooked together with Azure services in a lot of cases, because without all those things together, if one of those pieces doesn't work, then the whole consistency of experience exactly. doesn't work. And further to the point is, I would argue that the back-end services are the most important component to that experience, because if there's a failure in the back-end, then none of the apps work. So it's one of those things that I think as developers of the Azure side of things, we have to be very, very careful and understand the experiential components of the application.
Yeah, and it's no longer one or the other. They truly are a mix of both now.
Yeah.
So with that, we're actually going to take a very quick break this time so that we can make sure that you're out of here at 5 o'clock Eastern, as promised. But what I want to make sure that we do is get all your questions answered, the ones that we've been piling up in the chat window. I'll have Paul back up here. I'll have James back up here. We'll go through some of your questions. Make sure to start putting those in the chat. Give us about 5 minutes, and we'll get back to you, and then we'll take your questions live.